Welcome back to the Jude 23 Community Podcast. It's clarity for those who are curious or confused about all things Christianity. I'm Jeremiah Wood, along with our host, Nick Hardcastle, and this is Episode 7. Nick, how are we doing?
Doing good. Jeremiah, how are you doing? I've been prompted to dig in a little bit on your life. So tell us a little bit about you. How are you doing? What's going on? And let's break the fourth wall of Jeremiah Wood.
Yeah. One of our faithful listeners actually put in a request to hear how things are going on this end. I was telling Nick earlier that my life is weirdly simple and oddly complex, both at the same time. How I'm doing at the moment is I'm very, very tired. Like, I am super sleepy. We had, how many parties did we have, Nick? At least three parties over the weekend that I attended. We had my niece. I had two nieces that had birthdays on a Saturday. So I stayed up all night on Friday night and smoked all the meat. We had one whole brisket. We had two whole pulled pork shoulders. We had four slabs of spare ribs. I smoked some deer chili, and I made some fried chicken thighs as well. And so it was a lot of cooking, and it's part of the fun is being able to kind of stay up all night and just kind of take naps intermittently throughout the night and tend to the smoker. So that's kind of how my weekend went. And then we had three parties, and then we had just an incredible amount of food left over. So that's what my family gets to eat on the rest of the week. So that's how I'm doing right now. Still have not caught up on sleep, but I'm sure I will hear real quick. Now, to break the fourth wall about who Jeremiah is, again, oddly complex. I think one of the things that really defined me the most is just kind of the journey that my wife and I, we've been on. I was called to the ministry when I was 14 years old, and there's an incredibly long story behind that. But at 14 years old, the Lord called me into the ministry. And so I knew from that point forward kind of the trajectory of my life. And I went to Mid-America Nazarene University in Olathe, Kansas, for a ministry degree. And as soon as I graduated out of there, I became a pastor. And I've been pastor now for about 20 years. And over the course of 20 years, we've had a ton of ups and downs and ebbs and flows. And one of the biggest ebbs, I guess you want to call it, was when we had moved to Wichita here in Kansas to plant a new church back in 2017. Like, everything was going well and we were headed in the right direction. And then in 2020, COVID hit and we were ill prepared for what lied ahead. And so in May of 2020, so we were a portable church, which meant every Sunday we would pull a trailer in and at our location, and we would set up, and everything we owned as a church fit into this trailer. And we would set the trailer up, and then we would tear everything down after service and load the trailer back up. And then in May of 2020, our trailer got stolen, which means that our entire church, in essence, got stolen as well. So then after everything got stolen in May of 2020, we prayed, we sought the Lord, we rebuilt, we got all of our stuff kind of built back up. And then in October of 2020, everything got stolen again. And so a second time in the same year, our church had been stolen twice. We attempted a Hail Mary to try to work our way out of it. And lo and behold, it got intercepted. And so our team was tired. Our families were tired. Everybody was exhausted from the year of COVID. And in December of 2020, we decided to close our doors and we felt led to pursue other things. And so ever since then, I have been a real estate agent. I work for Keller Williams here in Wichita, Kansas, and I buy and sell properties. And I am currently working on my real estate appraiser's license as well. And that seems to be going really good. And so we're just kind of in a state where the Lord's kind of calling us to plant roots and to stay put until further notice. And so we're trying to be faithful with where we're at. I have a wife and we have four kids. My oldest is 20 years old. And then my three littles are 9, 10, and 11. And the reason for that gap is our three littles were adopted. So when our oldest was 9 years old, the Lord led us to adopt. And so we adopt our three youngest kids. And there's only about 24 months, 26 months, maybe, I don't know, something like that, between all three of them. And so they just kind of came boom, boom, boom. But yeah, Lord's faithful. And he grew our family just like we had hoped and prayed for. And he answered that prayer with gusto. And that is the basic life of Jeremiah Wood.
Very basic. Definition of basic right there, right?
I didn't know you. That's the oddly complex part.
Yeah. I mean, at first I was thinking, you know, like a nice Shrek analogy, you know, like an onion, you have layers. But then you got into it, I was like, this is more like, I don't know, some dragon fruit or something complex, you know. And there's a pomegranate. There's a lot on the inside. Right. But yeah.
Lots of little kernels.
Thanks for sharing that. I can't believe you were, your church got stolen twice. I mean, that right twice. There is, that's the definition of the enemy at work right there. But
yeah, just about.
It led you to where you're at right now. And
true.
I'm happy for it. But
I'm happy for it too.
Yeah. Well,
very, very happy. Well, and the Lord works everything together for the good of those who love him. And so as long as we keep loving the Lord and trusting in him, everything's going to work out exactly the way that he wants it to work out, because it's not the plans that we have for ourselves. It's the plans that the Lord has, and it's the Lord himself that makes them come to fruition. So that is where we hang our hat, and that's how we live our lives.
Amen. Amen. And talking about living lives, we're going to talk about a lot of lives. Here today on the Jude 23 Community Podcast. Really interested to see which way this goes.
I want to first start off by kind of recapping back in Genesis 1. Mm-hmm. And we talked about, we question who was Genesis, or let's just say the Torah, because it's the first five books. Who was the Torah written for? And who and where were they at in their circumstances? And so we talked about how the people of Israel, that Torah was written for them. They had just come out of slavery in Egypt. They found themselves as a free people delivered by God in Mount Sinai, but they had been in slavery for 400 plus years. And so God was reintroducing himself to them and reintroducing Israel back to their given and chosen identity. Mm-hmm. And so as we go through that, as we get ready to go through Genesis 5 just a little bit, we have to come to a place where we understand the way that Genesis 5 is written isn't as straightforward and it just means what it says like we read it. There is a very ingenious plan behind it. And in that ingenious plan, there is a design that is meant to communicate something to the people of Israel in the current state that they were in right after the Exodus.
Yeah. I mean, that's pretty big for setting the context of, I mean, Genesis 1 through 11.
Right.
The introduction of the Bible is the easiest way to say it. And this one, it's really tricky if you don't really know what you're looking at. This is probably the part of the Bible where, you know, us as a modern American Christian, I won't classify everyone at it, but we probably kind of glaze over. Like,
yeah,
let's read these names really quick because they're hard to pronounce and I won't get them right if I say them out loud. So let's just go ahead and truck on and not get to what's deeper in there. But yeah, there's some good stuff really in this part. And I think one of the cool things about it, whenever you relate it to the way like an Eastern reader would read this, it might be like probably one of their favorite parts of the Bible.
Right.
Because there's deeper meaning to it all. And you start looking at it, it's a little messy. So, you know, really just diving in deep on this is going to be do a good job of setting some context going forward, at least with the next couple of chapters of Genesis.
Right. And I think it's important too, like starting before we start tonight. So we stopped last week talking about Cain and Abel, and we talked about how it seemed as though Adam passed down the curse to Cain, But that maybe Adam corrected course and passed down the command to Abel. If you want to hear a better explanation about all of that, go back to last week's episode, episode 6, and you can begin to listen to that and get a little bit more context of that. But we stopped halfway through chapter 4, and so I kind of want to pick up tonight in chapter 4, starting in verse 16, and we're actually going to be talking about Cain and his family to start out with, because this is kind of how the genealogy goes, and the end of chapter 4 actually sets up the next genealogy in chapter 5, specifically with a new brother named Seth.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting, at least going through it. There's going to be some oddities that we're going to probably catch along the way of names. That are in both sides of, you know, Cain and then Seth's side of stuff. So do we want to get into it and read it?
Yeah. Why don't you read for us chapter 4, starting in verse 16.
Yep.
And go through the end of the chapter.
Okay. All right. Genesis 4. Starting in verse 16. Then Cain went away from the presence of the Lord and settled in the land of Nod, east of Eden. And Cain knew his wife, and she conceived and bore Enoch. When he built a city, he called the name of the city after his son Enoch. To Enoch was born Irad, and Irad fathered Mahulah, Mahulah fathered Methuselah, and Methuselah fathered Lamech. And Lamech took two wives, and the name of one was Adah, and the name of the other was Zillah. And Adah bore Jubal, and he fathered those who dwell in the tents and have livestock. And his brother's name was Jubal, and he fathered all those who play the lyre and pipe. And Zillah bore Tubal-Cain, and he was the forger of all instruments of bronze and iron. And the sister of Tubal-Cain was Naamah. Lamech said to his wives, Adah and Zillah, hear my voice, you wives of Lamech. Listen to what I say. I have killed a man for wounding me, a young man for striking me. If Cain's revenge is sevenfold, then Lamech's revenge is 77-fold. And Adam knew his wife again, and she bore a son and called his name Seth. For she said, God has appointed me another offspring instead of Abel, for Cain killed him. To Seth also a son was born, and he called him Enosh. And at that time, people began to call upon the name of the Lord.
That's good. So here's one thing that I think is really important to emphasize before we get going into Genesis 5, is that if you remember what we talked about, how Cain Cain developed his identity by the curse. The curse was that he was going to toil and work and build for himself and try to get for himself what God himself had promised to provide. So the curse of Cain was Cain trying to get for himself or build for himself what God promised to provide for him.
Yep.
The results or the consequences of that we see is that there is a progressive deterioration in that process, and it leads to greater and greater sin. It's recapping what we talked about last week, how there is a progressive nature in sin and the consequences in which it produces. We kind of see that in this law of diminishing returns, that the more you come back to something, the less fulfilling it becomes. So you have to have more of it. And the more of it you have, the more consequences it produces.
Yeah, that's good. I've heard this referred to as like the downward spiral of kind of humanity, at least at this point in time. So where like it just doesn't take off and just kind of go in a straight line. It takes off and it really just kind of picks up momentum as it goes at each turn. And really, honestly, just to kind of pull one thing out, when we were talking about how Cain had been brought into the curse, had lived under the curse, and he sought to get what God or what he thought God would not provide him. I think one of the first things we see is like, there's not a ceasing, like Cain didn't really seem like he learned a lot from that. because the first right. thing that he did was he went away and he built a city to which there wasn't like necessarily a command against building cities, but there really wasn't a thing for building cities at that time. And there's some more depth to why Cain had kind of built that city, or why they said that he did, mm-hmm. was to somewhat as a form of protection. After the Lord had already said that I'll put a mark on you and no one should harm Cain all the days of his life. Well, he doesn't even believe that. So he mm-hmm. surrounds himself, by his own means and his own power to allow him to have protection at that point in time.
Right.
So not only did he not learn from that, but he continued on in it, and it really just kind of helped kickstart this into even more chaos following.
Well, and this is the manifestation of what we were talking about in Genesis chapter 2, that sin always begins with a lie. And it's usually one of three lies: that God can't be trusted, God is withholding something from me, and God does not have his best for me. And so Cain obviously believed this about God, because God said, I'll put a mark on you, it'll protect you, everything's going to be okay. And Cain's like, nope, you won't protect me, you can't be trusted, you won't give me what I need, and you don't have your best out for me, so I'm going to build for myself what you had promised to provide, so I'm going to build cities to try to protect myself.
Yeah, and this honestly was probably the start of a lot. Mm-hmm. But as we kind of progressively move into a little bit further in the Bible, we'll see like cities are often kind of synonymously put together with a thought process of you have to build yourself up. Honestly, it often results as the affliction or not abusing, but kind of, what's the best way to say it? Neglecting others or taking mm-hmm. advantage of others.
Yeah.
So honestly, this, you know, city building, if you kind of skip over it really quick, you're like, all right, he built the city, we all live in a city. But at this point in time, it really probably was the fact that he believed a lie. And then he sat mm-hmm. there and said that I'm going to get this by my own means. And if I have to take advantage of anybody else along the way to get my own protection, I'm going to take care of it for myself.
Yeah. Yeah. And we find ourselves in this situation. Marty Solomon talked about this, right? That there are two kingdoms warring against each other, or at least juxtaposed to one another. Yeah. The kingdom of Shalom, which is what we see in the garden, and this kingdom of empire, which what Cain is building. And ultimately, this desire for empire, the consequences of it, is self-made, self-governed, self. Mm-hmm. And it leads to even greater sin than we ever saw before. And so if you look at Cain, he had killed one man, he had one wife, and then down the lineage, you get this guy named Lamech, and he takes for himself two wives, and he kills two people. Mm-hmm. And so now we're starting this downward spiral of not just departing from the Lord's command, but we're taking what was the Lord's gift to Adam, which was Eve, and the gift to both of them was oneness in marriage. And now we're starting to see marriage even be perverted, and now polygamy is becoming an even greater way to get for ourselves what God has promised to provide.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's good. And it really just solidifies that there is growing empire, really, does to go off the kind of the Marty Solomon terms, that in this world. So it was really deviating off the course of what God had intended at that point in time, which is good context going forward, that these, you know, 10 verses that we just read right here, plus the next chapter, are honestly setting the stage for events that are to come. And it needs to be held in that type of context to recognize the actions of God going forward and who God really is.
Yeah. There's Genesis 5 is a really interesting chapter because there's some really cool meaning behind it all. Mm-hmm. And I love it because understanding Cain and his family lineage sets up God's plan for redemption, both with Christ and also there in the moment at that point in time in history. And so in chapter 4, verse 25, in my Bible, it's labeled a new son, right? And it says that Adam knew his wife again, which is Eve, and she bore a son and named him Seth. For God has appointed another seed for me instead of Abel, whom Cain killed. And as for Seth, to him also a son was born, and he named him Enosh, and then men began to call on the name of the Lord. So that's a weird verse, and we'll maybe address that another time. But I kind of want to start hitting on this. Sin is continuously to progress in a downward spiral in a negative direction. And all of a sudden, the story turns course, and it says, but God has a plan, and it starts with a new son. I just want, instead of reading to you all of Genesis 5, which is long and repetitive and a little confusing, it's what we have here is a lineage, and in that lineage, we have the years that they lived. We're not going to talk about, there's a couple things we're not going to talk about tonight. Talk about who was Cain's wife. We're not going to talk about that. You can get online and find all those answers for yourself and have fun with it. The second thing that we're not going to talk about is we're not going to talk about the ages of everyone involved, and whether those are literal ages or if they are figurative, do they have allegory attached to them? We're not going to get into that. We don't have enough time. We have maybe 25 minutes left, and there's more important things to tackle. So we're not going to talk about those things. But if you have great explanations, feel free to put that in the comments below, and we'd be happy to entertain those as well. But what I do want to talk about, and my pastor taught me this, Nick, this might be a fun thing for you. I don't know if you've ever gotten this before or not, but my pastor taught me this, and ever since then, it's always stayed in my head until I forgot about it. And then something that we said earlier brought it back to my memory, so I had to pull up my notes again to find them, but I found them. And so let's just talk about the lineage and the people that were there. So you start with Adam, and then Adam gives birth to Seth, and Seth gives birth to Enosh, and then Enosh gives birth to Kenan, and then Kenan gives birth to Mahalalel, and then Mahalalel gives birth to Jared. Jared gives birth to Enoch. Enoch gives birth to Methuselah. Methuselah gives birth to Lamech, and then Lamech gives birth to Noah. This is where we can just read right over it, and everything is like, oh yeah, just a bunch of names, just a bunch of numbers. That's all I'm seeing here. But my pastor, growing up, taught me that each name has a very specific meaning. Have you heard this before?
I haven't, but I've got some wheels going off in my head on something else, so I'm loving to hear what you have to teach right
okay,
now.
Right. We'll come back to it. Yeah. So we have all of these names, and we think that we just read names, we're needing genealogies, but each name has a meaning in Hebrew. And so get this. Adam means man.
Yep.
Seth means appointed. Enosh means mortal. Kenan means sorrow. Mahalalel means blessed God or the blessed God. Mm-hmm. Jared means shall come down. Enoch means teaching. Methuselah means that his death shall bring. Lamech means the despairing or the deluge. And Noah in Hebrew means rest or comfort. Mm-hmm. And so think back what we talked about earlier. This story was written to a people. And the people, God was reintroducing himself to the people and reintroducing the people to their given identity. And this is part of the story. The part of the story is when sin looks like it is spiraling out of control, God is still on the throne and he has a plan. And so this genealogy, if you just knew it from the definitions of each name, it would read like this. Man has been appointed mortal sorrow, but the blessed God shall come down and teaching his death shall bring the deluge rest or comfort. Or his death shall bring the despairing rest or comfort. Let me read that one more time.
Yeah.
Man has been appointed mortal sorrow, but the blessed God shall come down teaching that his death shall bring the despairing rest and comfort. That is the significance of each name in its order with its Hebrew definition. It is God telling the people of Israel, I have always had a plan. I still have a plan. And for us in our current time and state, know that his plan has always been and will always be Jesus.
Yeah.
That man has been appointed mortal sorrow, but the blessed God shall come down as we know it in the form of Jesus Christ. And he will teach that his death will bring the despairing, those of us who are in mortal sorrow, that will bring his death will bring the despairing rest and comfort.
Oh, I love that. Oh man. My honestly is going in and I was like, I don't know what we're talking about. Like, I've got some stuff here at the bookends and we started getting into this and I'm like, something else popped in my mind and you brought that up. Okay, this might be my new favorite little chunk of the Bible. At least favorite chunk of the Bible for April of 2024. That's some mind blowing stuff right there. Like, how cool is it that he is telling them from the beginning that in this chaos, that this is what he's doing. He's putting it all together. But there's one other thing to point out, at least for the listeners on this. It's how these names were determined. It wasn't how, like, you know, Jeremiah, you named your children, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know. Maybe you prayed about it, but maybe, you know, you just sat there and it's not like how we name things normally in current day society where, you know, we might name, our son after our grandfather or, you know, like we like the name Phil. So we named him Phil. It's different. So traditionally at that point in time, people would at least pray into a name to discern what that person's life will be largely about or what they will contribute back to everything. So like whenever you talked about Noah, meaning rest or comfort, like there was actually some discernment that he would provide rest or comfort. So it's the fact that these names weren't just pulled like randomly out of a hat. They were who was naming them discerned to be appropriate for the story of God. So they were put in that order intentionally by the Creator, not just the fact that he's telling us this, but they actually were just true things that he put in discernment in this at this time. It wasn't just random order of names that came together.
Right. Well, and look at two things. Yeah. And look at how it started back in chapter 4, starting in verse 26. Yep. You have Seth, and it says that at that time, men began to call on the name of the Lord. Why? Why were they calling on the name of the Lord? I believe the reason they were calling on the name of the Lord is because they began to recognize that the progressive nature of sin was increasing and the consequences of sin are spiraling out of control. And they are seeing in and of themselves that they are helpless to save themselves from the mess that they themselves are creating. And because they are helpless, they start calling on the name of the Lord to come and to help save us. And the way that the Lord chooses to help save them is by giving Eve a new son. Now, that new son is in himself not the Savior, but as we know it today as Christians, that new son is an archetype of the son that God is going to give in Jesus Christ to come and save the world from their sins. But when in that time, the idea of all of this lineage about Seth and Enosh and Kenan and Mahalalel and all of them, this is the Lord saying, here's my plan. You have been appointed mortal sorrow, but I, the blessed God, am going to come down teaching that my death shall bring the despairing rest and comfort.
Yeah.
And here's the interesting part, because it not only speaks to Jesus, but it's also beginning to point at the flood.
Yeah. especially when you talk about like the deluge, right?
Yeah.
And there's, I don't really want to get in specifically to the flood today, because there's a lot that I think we need to unpack with that. Because it,
oh yeah, like, not today.
Yeah. Context is very important for the flood, because otherwise it really is going to alter the way that you think about God. And it's, God is good. Like, that's the set, that's the story that we're trying to tell from Genesis 1 to the end of Revelation. So one thing that specifically pops up in my mind that I was just like, whenever we were going through this, that my mind just started kind of like unraveling, is that we're sitting in the middle of a chiasm right here. And
oh boy.
Yeah. And
we love chiasms.
We don't have to get too far into it, but I don't know if you noticed that, that there was like two Methuselahs, you know, whether you want to trace it from, it says Cain, and then it goes all the way down to Methuselah, and it says Seth, and it goes all the way down to Methuselah. There's two Enochs, there's two Lamechs. But honestly, I think if you just put the middle of this thing together, which don't quote me on it, but I think that it's where it ends at. It's that phrase that you talked about a second ago. At that time, people began to call on the name of the Lord. And if you stress that to the context of the people that were being told this story, not only are they piecing together the fact that these names are pointing towards Christ, but it's really like, how do you get to that salvation that they were going to be continually looking for, to get away from, you know, to get back to the promise of Eden. And God is telling them from the beginning, before he even says like that, it's to call on the name of the Lord, because then a true kind of Hebrew would be searching for what's the center of this chiasm at this point in time, so I can find a deeper meaning. And he really is just wanting to center his people on the fact that if you call on the name of the Lord, and then it goes into what you were just bringing at that second time, that the Lord will provide Christ to be able to save you and bring you back to, you know, the creation that you were intended to be.
Yeah. Very true. And I'm looking at this and I'm trying to process it in today's mentality to help us understand that even from the beginning, God is teaching us the same things that are true for us even today. Like, some people will look at it and be like, there's nothing that I could ever get out of the Old Testament. Just give me the New Testament. It doesn't apply to me anymore. No, that's so far gone. That's so far off.
Yeah.
Because God has been saying the same thing ever since the beginning of the story. And you remember, this is what the Bible is all about. It's God's ongoing redemptive work in the world. It is the story from beginning to end. It's the story of this world that's juxtaposed to the story of God. And we have to find ourselves in God's story. And the way that we find ourselves in God's story is just like you said, we have to come to a place where we have to recognize we can no longer get for ourselves the very things that God has promised to provide. We need to call on the name of the Lord to come and do that work in us. We have been appointed this mortal sorrow, but the one who died for us has to come and rescue us. If we continue to find our identity in the constant trying to get for ourselves, we will constantly find ourselves in the progression of sin with the consequences that come with it. But if we will allow God to introduce himself to us and introduce us to the identity that he has called us to, chosen us, and created us in, then we will begin to see the blessing that comes with living in the identity of the command like Abel did. And sure, it might come with its own levels of persecution and pain, but it far outweighs the glory, or the glory that we receive from the Lord far outweighs anything that could ever happen to us. And I say all that to say this, that there is a starting point that we have to have, and it comes with calling on the name of the Lord. And when we begin to do that, that is the prayer that God will always answer. If you will ask God to come and save you from yourself and allow him to come and do his perfect work in you, what is that work? That work is separation, filling, and blessing. God desires to separate you out of the chaos of sin, but he also wants to separate the sin of chaos out of you. So he's going to separate you from the chaos and separate the chaos out of you. He desires to fill you with new creation. And when that new creation takes root in your life, he will bless you to be a blessing, not just in your own life, but to be a blessing to the entire world.
Yeah, I mean, that's so good. And let's just go ahead and put in a little bit of context, because I think that a lot of people think exactly like what you're saying. It's like, I don't need the Old Testament and all this stuff like that. If you fast forward to, you know, Easter weekend that we just had, whether your pastor, you know, went over the entirety of the story leading up to the crucifixion and the crucifixion. But, you know, Jesus gets into the garden and he starts praying, not my will, but your will be done. He's essentially saying he's calling on the name of the Lord at that point in time, because he got it. Like, if anyone knew what the intentions and the truth behind Genesis were and were living it out in practicality, it's Jesus. And if we can't honor him enough to just dig in deeper on this Bible to understand what the Lord has been trying to tell us from the beginning, what are we doing? Like, we're missing the point. We didn't have this however many, you know, hundreds of pages that were put in at the beginning of our Bible for no reason. It's to help us understand that this story has a start to it, and the start was made by God. And if we don't believe that the start's of value, what good is the end? And I'm not trying to say that with the fact to say that, you know, Jesus is sufficient in and of himself, but Jesus also wants us to know what the Father was about. Like, all he did was he came down and he preached, and he changed the minds of people and say, this is what the Father is about. This is what the Father is about. This is what the Father is about. And he did that specifically working through Torah and the Old Testament. He had the correct interpretation of it. That's whenever he gets in there and he starts having scriptural throwdown rap battle, battles with the Pharisees. He is like saying, you know, you've heard it said, but I say unto you, here is the correct interpretation of this. And this is what the Father's been saying the entirety of the time. And I just want you to believe that the Father is good and he has good plans for you. So going off of this weekend, I just think it's so important that we have landed on this at this exact same time. Jesus lived it out. So he called on the name of the Lord. And through that, everyone was saved. I mean, the story holds true and rings true from start to finish.
Yeah. It does. And from start to finish, we continue to see the same character and nature of God, the same rhythms, the same, how do I even say it? It's the way that God created everything, that same form is still in effect throughout the entirety of Scripture, even until today. Yeah. And that humanity has the proclivity to try to get for themselves this curse that Cain was under, and it just creates more and more sin. It's progressive by nature, and it creates more and more consequences. But then when we look at Abel living out the command, we see the blessings that come with it. And the character and nature of God that we see, we begin to see in Seth, not himself, but his story and his lineage, that when we get to a place where we are so out of control that we don't think that there's any help for us, God himself will be the help, or what David calls the ever-present help in our time of need. Mm-hmm. Not just to get us through our tiny little situation that we're in this moment in time, but he will be the ever-present help to continue to remind us who he is and remind us of who we are and our identity that we have found in him, and that the life everlasting that he has promised will not come because of the work that we can do for ourselves, but it will be the surrender of following the command that he has laid out before us.
Yeah. And I think that's important for the simple fact that, you know, often we feel like You know, as Christians, we try to sit there and say, well, the Lord's coming at this time. The Lord's coming at this time. I think that something important is to realize the fact that whenever he comes is whenever he chooses to come, but we have to partner in his story to help him. Like,
yeah,
I think that, the simple fact is the Lord will provide whatever he needs for his story to be sufficient to bring it about. But there's also, he chooses in the middle of this to partner with people. Like,
yeah,
he doesn't, sit there and say, well, Cain, you really messed this up. So I'm going to just go ahead and take this thing and just self-correct it. And we're not going to worry about building any more story. And like, we'll just pop Abraham out of some dirt by himself over here. And we'll just skip it. What he is also continually showing in the beginning of the story is that he wants to partner with people in the redemptive work of this world. So like, you know, and it's important of context to moving into Noah, but also like, you know, Seth being a representation of a new creation and helping bring about this lineage and everything right here. Don't think that you aren't called to be a part of this story.
Right.
Realize the fact that the Lord is looking for a partner in this. And when you start partnering with him, you bring the kingdom of Shalom, you bring the Lord's kingdom into earth right now at every moment that you get.
Yeah. Yeah. And that Shalom will always put to rest the anxiety that empire creates in us.
Yeah.
Always, always. So the question then is, how do I begin to call on the name of the Lord? How do I begin to, lean into Shalom? How do I begin to allow God to introduce himself to me? How do I begin to allow God to reintroduce myself to the identity that he created me in? How do I begin this process? Look at chapter 5. Let's start with verse 29. So Lamech has a son named Noah, and starting in let me look here. What did I say? 29?
Yeah.
Lamech had a son named Noah, and he called his name Noah, saying, this one will comfort us. This one will comfort us concerning our work and toil of our hands because of the ground which the Lord had cursed. Yeah. So we talked about this a little bit last night that, or last week. That, sorry, still tired. We talked about this a little bit last week and how we read the story and we think that God himself had cursed the land and that God was the one that cursed Adam and said, okay, because of you, this is now your punishment. But as we're looking at the story, it seemed as though God was telling Adam, look, this is the natural consequence of trying to build for yourself. It's hard. It's toilsome. And the ground itself becomes cursed because of you, not because this is the discipline I'm handing out, but it becomes cursed because of the curse that you continue to live in.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? And yeah. So what happens is Lamech is saying, well, now I have Noah and he's going to bring us rest and comfort because of the curse that God gave us. And so when we find ourselves wrapped up in the identity of the curse, our natural tendency is to always blame God,
yeah,
to always blame one another, and to never take responsibility for ourselves. So if we are going to learn to call out on the name of the Lord, we have to recognize and understand that we ourselves have been responsible for the consequences that our own actions and sin have created. We ourselves have to see ourselves as responsible for the lies that we have believed about God. And we ourselves have to come to a place where we humble our hearts to the point where we are crying out to God to come and save us from the situation we found ourselves in.
Yeah. And I'm not going to get really deep into this because it could be its own podcast on a separate day. But a lot of what the traditional Jews would teach about this is that when we go back to it, and we talked about this last week or the week before, but not only were we made out of the breath of God, but we were made out of the ground. So that's, and that caused the sin against the earth, not just the sin against the Lord. So,
right.
What Noah actually ended up being accredited to, was providing something that in essence could numb the pain of feeling the toil from the earth. Mm-hmm. So Noah, was, by the traditional way that the Jews teach it, responsible for building the plow. And I don't know if you are really familiar with farming or anything like that. Let's just say it like this. If you go out and plant your garden and you have like, you know, a 40 by 40 garden and you plant it all by hand, it's not very much fun. But if you go out there and you have a tool that you can use to kind of till it up, it makes it a lot easier. So what Noah was kind of attributed to doing, and not that he did it wrong, anything wrong, but he brought forth something that could help humans numb the pain of feeling the sting of the curse and numb the fact that they didn't have to take the full responsibility and weight of sin on for themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So honestly, it kind of helps set a little bit of a story going forward that not only was the fact that like there was relief, it's the world was needing some sort of correction going forward at this point in time because humans were maximizing what they could do with their own devices. And honestly, it was really at a point where we had to sit there and say, okay, we need someone to help partner to bring this back together. Mm-hmm. So we needed someone who could call on the name of the Lord to steer us back in the right direction and not just try to sit there and sedate us from our bad feelings and the guilt of sin, but someone that would help steer us through the fact that sin is real and what we need to do is turn back to the Lord at this point in time with it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's so good. Because when we look at, and I'm excited for Genesis 6, it's got a lot of weird stuff in it.
Yeah.
But regardless, it's still going to be, I think it's going to be good stuff that we can drudge through. We might need to take a couple of weeks on Genesis 6, maybe. Yeah. But again, speaking on what you were saying about numbing the pain, I mean, how much more do we, how much more does numbing the pain cause us to continue to prolong our suffering? It doesn't fix anything.
No.
The more we try to numb the pain, the more we're just putting off being healed from it.
Yeah.
And I tell my kids this every morning is that, that success takes discipline, and discipline is usually painful, but we should feel the pain, love the pain. And they're like, Dad, that's so weird. I have this whole book of like 55 sayings that we go over every single morning to try to shape the character of my kids. And that's one of them, is that success takes discipline, and discipline is often painful, mm-hmm. but we should feel the pain and love the pain. Why? Because the pain is what actually does a transformative work in us. And so if we find ourselves in a place of sorrow, if we have been determined mortal sorrow, and the more we sit and recognize that we are helpless in curing that sorrow in our lives, the quicker we will be to call on the name of the Lord to come and help us and set our life straight. But the more that we try to numb the pain, the more we are prolonging the effect that pain is supposed to have. Pain has a purpose. The purpose is something is very wrong here and needs to be remedied. And when we numb the pain, we are prolonging this effect that says something's wrong here and it needs to be remedied, to be like, well, I can handle it. I don't need to go in and get this taken care of. I don't know. That's such a good word, because the more, it's essentially the same. We're trying to be our own savior, right?
Yeah.
And it just goes back to what I keep saying, is that we're trying to get for ourselves what God has promised to provide.
I mean, it's kind of like if you break your arm and you take some painkillers to just go ahead and get rid of the feeling that you have, and you don't do anything about it, your arm's still broken at the end of the day.
Right.
I mean,
well, I have a perfect example for that. I have a brother, and He is he's terrible when it comes to being compliant with doctor's orders. And so he'll get super sick, and then he'll get so sick that he needs to go to the doctor and get medication, and he'll get like some antibiotics, and he's like, okay, you need to take this for the next 7 days. Well, he'll take the antibiotics for like 2 days and he'll feel better and be like, I'm all better. I don't need those antibiotics. And so he stops taking them. And so he's missing like 5 days of the antibiotic medication. Yeah. And if you know anything about antibiotics, if you start but don't finish, two things happen. One, your body becomes immune to the antibiotics. Like it doesn't receive the antibiotics like it should. But two, what ends up happening is that the viruses that you've given them just a little bit of antibiotics, they learn to build up their own immunity to them. So now the antibiotics, one, your body doesn't receive it. And two, the viruses that you have are immune to it. And so it just doesn't work. And then you get even more sick than you ever were before, because now you have a, you know, steroid charged virus in your system.
Yeah. And I think that's a perfect way of just how Genesis 5 wraps up with, you know, Lamech. And if you kind of go back to how Lamech was before and the increasing evil that was happening in the world, it was kind of like just stopping taking the antibiotic part of the way through and just letting the chaos kind of implode and build off one another. So, I mean, the fact that God reminds us that even when the chaos is growing, whether it be in yourself or with others, and it multiplies, if you can just call on the name of the Lord, he's going to be there to deliver you through. And he's got a plan, and it's been like that from the beginning. So,
right.
Don't cut your antibiotics short, and don't cut your Jesus short. Because he's got a lot that he wants to tell you in his word.
Absolutely. So good. So true. Nick, this is another great episode.
Yeah.
Like last week, I thought last week was my favorite episode. And I think this week might be my favorite episode. Because I love how Genesis continues to preach the gospel in every chapter.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, you know, Genesis 4:16. To the end of chapter 5 is going to be my favorite chunk of the Bible, at least for this week, maybe the next. I'm going to probably go back in and just geek out a little bit on some of this stuff. It's some good stuff here.
It is good stuff. And I want to encourage everybody listening that if you don't believe me about the names, just go online and find a Bible dictionary where you can get the meanings of each name. And it is going to line itself up just like that. I've done this multiple times just to make sure I'm not crazy. And it does. It's exactly what it says it is.
Download the Blue Letter Bible.
Well, one of my favorite tools.
Yeah.
One of these days, we're going to have an episode where we teach people the same Bible study methods that we use when it comes to looking stuff up.
Be good enough. I mean, I'll tell you what. If you can get on Bible Gateway, it'll solve a lot of issues for you at that point in time.
That is the truth.
Yeah.
That is the truth. All right. Well, I think this is a great stopping point. This is Nick Hardcastle, and I'm Jeremiah Wood, and this is the Jude 23 Community Podcast. It's clarity for those who are curious or confused about all things Christianity. And hopefully, by this point in time, there's a lot more clarity than there is confusion.
Yeah. All right.
But we still got a long ways to go. So God bless. Have a great night, and we'll see you next week.